Bethlehem is the birthplace of Jesus, and as Christmas approaches, our thoughts instinctively turn to this small town in the Holy Land where the Christian message began. But what is the situation like for Christians living in Bethlehem nowadays, where they form only a tiny minority of the town's population? The separation barrier between Israel and the Palestinian territories has hit Bethlehem particularly hard by effectively cutting off easy access to the city of Jerusalem, located only 7 kilometres away. The restrictions on movement caused by the separation barrier and Israeli checkpoints, together with widespread poverty and high unemployment, are the main difficulties faced by Palestinians living under Israeli occupation in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. But, as I've been finding out, there are rays of hope despite the prevailing gloom. And one good news is that pilgrims from across the world are flocking to Bethlehem in large numbers this year to attend the Christmas celebrations there. Brother Peter Bray is the Vice Chancellor at Bethlehem University, a Catholic institute of higher learning open to students of all faith traditions. I began by asking him whether people in Bethlehem felt that their plight had rather fallen off the world's radar this last year, given the social and political upheaval in many other areas of the Middle East.
Well, in some ways it has been off the world radar, but in other ways, because of President Abbas's action in the United Nations, it became center stage for a while in September. So there has been a real sense of optimism of the possibility of something happening as a result of what President Abbas did. I suppose my concern about all that is that it could be another experience of what they've been through so often, you know, where there is an optimism, a sense that things are going to change, and then nothing does. The fact that UNESCO has recognized Palestine is something that people are holding on to here. But I think that when we look back over the year, really nothing very much has changed. And I think the response of the Israeli government has been to increase the number of settlement houses that are being built and also extending the wall. So I think, you know, this Christmas thing is something very, very special to Bethlehem, obviously. It's the time when the whole world, the whole Christian world, focuses on this little town. And so it's a time to celebrate. It's a time to be conscious of being here in Bethlehem. And I think in some ways it enables people to forget about some of the pressures they're under.
And have there been a large number of pilgrims visiting Bethlehem in the run-up to this Christmas?
There has been, and I was talking to somebody this morning who was telling me that all the hotels are full. And so that's a really very, very important thing for Bethlehem, because the pilgrim people are the source, really, of a lot of the income that comes into Bethlehem. And so to have a very positive attitude among people from around the world to coming to Bethlehem is very, very helpful to us here.
Looking at the small Christian community, which of course is much, much smaller than it used to be, is there still a lot of young people who are choosing to emigrate from the Holy Land, from Bethlehem in particular?
Well, if we look at our students, we have 30% of the students here at Bethlehem University are Christian. And in my discussions with them, the vast majority of them would like to stay here in Palestine, would like to stay here in Bethlehem. The difficulty is the economic situation, you know, which is controlled completely by Israel. That, you know, unemployment is a real issue. For example, most of our graduates from the nursing program, they get jobs because of the shortage of nurses. Same with the education people. But some of our business people, you know, go to Jordan or down into the Gulf because there isn't jobs here. So I think the economic situation is one of the things that's driving people out. But I think one of the things we have to be careful about is talking about percentages. The percentage of Christians is falling, but the raw numbers are not falling anywhere near the percentage, because one of the reasons the percentage is falling is the increase in the Muslim population. Christian families would have 2-3 children, where there are many, many of our students here, Muslim students at Bethlehem University, who come from families of 10, 12, 14 children. So, you know, it doesn't take long for the percentage to change.
What about the problems caused by the security barrier, both for your students and teaching staff, but also how it impacts upon the town of Bethlehem in general?
Yeah, well, there are several things I could talk about here, but one of the significant things is the restriction it places on movement. Bethlehem is some 7 kilometres from Jerusalem. I had a meeting in there earlier this week, and I had to allow an hour to get into Jerusalem because I don't know how long it's going to take me to get through the checkpoint. Now, there are many of our students, for example. I was talking to one guy just recently, second year, so he's probably 21, 22 years old, has never set eyes on the sea because he can't move through the barrier to get to the sea. Never been to Galilee. You know, a Christian person here. And it just seems strange to me that in this land where I, as a foreigner from New Zealand, can go to Galilee, can go up to the Sea of Galilee and to Tiberias and to Nazareth, and people who are born here can't. And I think that's one of the significant restrictions. Another thing is in terms of our faculty and staff, see, people who are living in East Jerusalem, for example, who teach here, have to come through the checkpoints twice a day. And we had one guy who had been here for quite a number of years in a significant position. Sometimes it would take him 2 hours to get home. And so he just gave up and he resigned and is now working in Jerusalem. But the other thing in regard to movement, because Palestinians and people here from Bethlehem can't go through the wall, they can't fly out of Tel Aviv, and so they have to go across to Amman. You know, we've had somebody here just recently went to a 2-day conference in Europe, and it had to allow 5 days because you have to allow an extra day to get across to Jordan, to Amman, to fly out of there, and then another day coming back. And so there are all of those sorts of implications. But what is particularly concerning to people here in Bethlehem at present is what's happening just near them in the little town of Bejala next door, where the wall is still being extended. And we've just found out that the wall is going to take the Cremazon Valley away from Bejala, which means 58 families whose land is in the Cremazon Valley are going to not be able to get to the land after the wall goes in. So, you know, there's this sense of being gradually closed in and isolated that the people here are feeling. And I'm just amazed at their resilience. And I find it inspiring that despite all of this hassle, despite all of these restrictions, there's just such a positive attitude that they have of getting on with life. And like, as I mentioned, celebrating Christmas. You know, it's a great festival here. And on Christmas Eve, the Patriarch has a formal procession into Bethlehem from Jerusalem. And there's a great parade of scouts and drums and people escorting the Patriarch into Manger Square.
You talked there, of course, about what's going to be happening on Christmas Eve. Looking at the Church of the Nativity, there's been quite a lot in the press about the poor state of the roof. How bad is the state of the roof? I mean, is it really in quite a dangerous situation?
Well, I'm not sure it's dangerous, but it's certainly in great need of repair because it's been neglected for so long. Now, what has happened over the last 12 months or so is that arrangements are in place to repair it, and there was an engineering study done recently which identified the problem and outlined a way of fixing it. And the problem is the water penetrating the roof and going into the walls and into the wood around them. And the result of that is the damage to the frescoes. But it's got past the state of nobody doing anything, and it's almost at the stage now where bidding will take place for people to repair it. And there certainly is a need to do something about it.
Can you trace, in fact, very briefly for us the church's history, you know, when it was first built and some of its most striking features?
One of the things that's quite fascinating is that it is a major Christian site. It's traditionally the birthplace of Jesus, but it's also one of the oldest surviving Christian churches. There's reference to this being venerated as a sacred site going back to 160 AD when Justin Martyr talked about it. And then, you know, of course, when Constantine and his mother in the 326 commissioned a church to be built here, and and then that was dedicated, I think it was 339. And so there has been something here from way back in that time. And then in 530, Justinian destroyed that church and built a larger one, and that's really the remains of that church that is still here today. And then, of course, when the Crusaders came around 1009, they took over and did a renovation of the interior in the 1100s. Then in the middle 1800s, there was a fire, there was an earthquake and a fire that destroyed the furnishings of the interior but didn't damage the structure of the church. Then, of course, in 1847, there's the famous theft of the Silver Star that is over the place where Jesus is supposed to have been born. And as you probably are aware, that led to the international crisis that eventually led to the Crimean War. And then in 1852... as a way of having people responsible for it, the Catholics, the Armenians, and the Greek Orthodox churches were granted custody of this church. When you walk in, there's a small room, and then you walk into the nave, and there's a wide area between two rows of columns. There are 44 columns altogether. And then in the middle of the central part are trapdoors, or doors that open, and they reveal floor mosaics, which go back to the very original before Justinian's time. And that's quite special because it's a whole complex of designs and very beautiful mosaics in the floor. Now, the grotto itself, which is really the center of the whole thing, is underneath the altar, the raised area that the Greek Orthodox have. And you come to a flight of steps, about 12 or so steps, that lead you down into a rectangular cavern, really, where the star is. And as you go down to the right, there's a cave, and in the middle of that cave is the silver star on the floor, which is traditionally venerated as the spot where Jesus was born. I find it a very special place. Several times, another brother and myself have gone down to the grotto up at 3-4 o'clock on Christmas morning, and it's just something incredibly special to sit in the grotto on Christmas morning and try to take in that, you know, this is where Jesus was born. It's quite magic, really. I can't find words to actually describe what it's like, but it is a very special place.
I was speaking to Brother Peter Bray, Vice-Chancellor of Bethlehem University.